You are listening to Due North. Today I have with me Professor Mark Gruhl, and we are going to discuss a certain planning perspective of the reason behind why we are facing issues of lack of walkability, lack of reliable public transit, and also car dependency in northern cities. And so today, Professor Gruhl joins me to discuss aspects of this issue. Would you like to introduce yourself?
Sure. Thanks so much, Ariel, and absolutely a pleasure to be here today. My name is Dr. Mark Gruhl. I'm an associate professor in the School of Environmental Planning, and in that role, I get to do a lot of very fun and I hope interesting research. And one of the areas of research that I'm increasingly interested in and focused on is some of the challenges around urban planning for northern city centers in Canada, not just here in BC, but indeed across Canada as a whole. And some of the kind of unique aspects of those cities that really contribute to a pretty distinct northern identity for our cities that maybe doesn't match exactly what we have in other areas of our province or indeed globally.
Thank you so much for sharing what you do and who you are. That's great. I think it's important to have this sort of perspective when looking into issues such as these. And so from a planning perspective, what do you think are some of the major factors that have shaped how car dependent our city presently is in Prince George?
Yeah, I would probably start to respond to that question by acknowledging a lot of the really great work that our planners across Canada, both in large centers and smaller rural centers and First Nations across Canada do, because it's a really, really complex challenge to try and improve quality of life and advance the planning and design of our communities. Part of the reason that I say that gets, I think, to the response to the question, which really speaks to a particular period, especially a period in the post-World War II era, where a lot of the planning and design typologies, so quite literally the patterns that we had for putting streets in the ground, the patterns that we used for doing things like identifying where residential lots might be located, their size and shape and orientation around particular street patterns. A lot of that planning was put in place in a post-World War II era, and in a relatively short period of time, particularly in northern cities where a lot of the growth in a place like Prince George was in that post-World War II era from around early or late 1950s till early 1980s, the city grows from about 5,500 people to around 67,000. So it's in that context of really, really rapid growth in a post-war era that we actually lock in to the ground a lot of infrastructure design, particularly things like street design that we're still seeking to kind of address and still living with today. And alongside that really rapid period of growth, we're utilizing planning typologies or models that are really quite directly oriented towards quite simply accommodating the car in the way that we plan and design space. So in Prince George, although I know I'll note that this is true in communities and cities across Canada, we have a really heavy use of and direct implementation of Clarence Perry's neighborhood unit, for instance, and we see it all throughout the bowl area, particularly in some of the more residential areas where we don't have a lot of mixed use. And that as a planning model that was used by planners of the day quite intentionally seeks to create communities that are primarily residential, that maybe have some recreation or educational use at their heart, that are surrounded by high volume roadways that really intentionally drive traffic around the neighborhood rather than through the neighborhood. And a lot of these principles that we put in the ground, as I'm saying, are not particularly conducive to walking because they tend to produce relatively low density environments where amenities, places you shop, places you might go to eat are relatively far apart and very hard to access if you're moving by anything other than an automobile.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that is definitely something that I can see in Prince George, navigating the city every day. I live downtown, but for most people, it's very difficult, for sure, to find something that you can just walk to your grocery store. Oftentimes, it's still a struggle for me as well. Mm-hmm. And so you mentioned the rapid growth, and I would say that from what you mentioned, rapid growth likely had a lot to do with industry. How would you say the natural resources industry has influenced the design of these northern cities beyond that?
Yeah, I think that is one, from a historical perspective, one really key way that resource industries have shaped the planning and design of our northern cities, just in the sense that very strong resource economies in place like northern BC throughout that post-war period up until the early 80s really drove tremendous rapid growth that was accommodated utilizing a lot of these planning models that I talked about. Mm-hmm. The other, I think, interesting way to think about the relationship between, say, resource industries and communities and planning and design is maybe thought of in a bit more of a contemporary setting. And thinking about how design fits into our communities or our cities as often in a contemporary way, more of an economic development tool. So I think we can look at many southern centers in particular where perhaps they don't have as strong a resource economy, but they do have stronger economies in the areas of knowledge production. So I'm thinking finance, often real estate is thrown in there. You know, these are the types of kind of creative industries that Richard Florida talks a lot about. And in cities that have a really strong set of creative industries, or that are really trying to pursue those creative industries, the design and planning of our communities, particularly some of our more mixed-use, walkable, amenity-rich neighborhoods, becomes not just the kind of fabric that we utilize in our lives living in our communities. It actually becomes, I think, part of the overall economic development strategy. So I often like to use Kitchener, Ontario as a really good example, partly because I spent about a decade living there, including living in a really rapidly changing and now gentrifying downtown. But another part of the reason I like to use Kitchener as an example when I talk about this relationship between economic development and planning and design is because for the last 10 years, they've really aggressively pursued what is often referred to in the literature as a knowledge-based development strategy, in that they've went to try and attract a lot of firms and labor that would be within the kind of often referred to as the knowledge economy or knowledge sector. And in a lot of cases in Kitchener, that's tech sector firms. So quite big firms like Desire to Learn that produces a learning platform for universities. Google has a headquarters there, and a lot of other smaller, medium-sized firms that I'm not mentioning. But in attracting those or in developing a strategy to try and attract those firms, often a bit of a ground-up approach is taken, where you're trying to attract the labor that those organizations or those firms require to your community and create a certain density of a knowledge labor force that then becomes an attractive factor for some of these tech sector or other knowledge sector type firms. And when we think about, you know, I hate to just throw around the term millennial, but when we think about what folks, particularly those who might fall into the millennial demographic, are looking for in a community and in a city, often it's many of the kind of planning and design principles that we talk about in relation to getting away from urban sprawl. So they're looking for walkable neighborhoods. They're looking to be able to live close to downtown. They're looking for really vibrant streetscapes and really well-developed park and green spaces. You know, all the best practices we have in planning, it turns out, can become a pretty powerful, attractive factor for this labor force. And in that sense, the planning and design of our communities and neighborhoods actually becomes part of the overall economic development strategy for many, many cities. And we're seeing this increasingly utilized in the smart cities movement and how planning and design is playing into that. I think maybe one of the differences in some of our northern cities, where we have a far larger resource-based economy, is that perhaps at times this kind of thinking around economic development being driven by the design and planning of our city to attract knowledge-based sectors perhaps isn't as prominent. That's not to say there aren't really strong efforts underway. There has been, I think, some incredible work, for instance, in Thunder Bay in rethinking and revitalizing a waterfront as part of revitalizing downtown. But often we don't see some of those strategies pursued just quite as aggressively, or maybe invested in by the federal and provincial governments, maybe more importantly, as aggressively in some of our northern cities.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's very true. I think that would definitely explain some of why we see what we see today in these cities. And so given the designs that are currently in place, do you think it is possible to make our city at least mostly walkable, or at the very least significantly less car dependent? And adding on to that, what are some ways that both planners and average citizens alike could work towards that?
Yeah, I'll try and tease apart the various kind of bits of the question there. Mm-hmm. Yeah, again, I think that I could probably comment, or would like to comment maybe more broadly, about what I see happening in northern cities to try and advance more walkable designs and planning that incorporates a whole range of sustainable development principles that kind of fit with walkability. One of the things that we see particularly northern cities seeking to do, and sometimes it can be a pretty significant challenge, is actually being far more entrepreneurial in the way that they are taking risks and investing in infrastructure within their cities. So I mentioned Thunder Bay, for example, and the really, really great planning and design work that has gone into the waterfront there. You know, I think if you went back probably 10 years, there wouldn't be people kicking down the door to dump significant amounts of capital into Thunder Bay to develop things like the new condo buildings, hotel developments along the waterfront. And it really required a lot of risk-taking and a huge amount of work on the part of the city and the planning department and a whole range of partners to actually become part of a public-private partnership that would invest the city's money, partner with the province in investing money, and attract private investment and private capital to help spur a project of that size. And I think that's kind of a risk profile, or a form of risk-taking that we don't always see in municipalities.
Mm-hmm.
And I think if I focus kind of more specifically here in Prince George, in terms of opportunities to enhance walkability and start to create more complete streets and more complete neighborhoods, I don't know that in any city we're ever going to get to a point in the future where everywhere across our city has a walk score of 100, for instance. But I do see some really significant advancements being made in terms of improving the amount of housing that we have in downtown. We have some pretty significant housing projects, starting with the Parkhouse condominium project, new student housing projects going into the downtown. You know, that is going to totally change, I think, the profile outside of 9 to 5 in downtown once we have a significant population base living down there. We're going to have more people out accessing services, restaurants, presumably in a post-COVID world. You know, simply having more people living in the downtown, I think, is going to be a big part of improving walkability as a whole. And I think one of the other really big opportunities we have here in Prince George, and I think there's already efforts underway to kind of think along these lines, is to start to link more directly some of our kind of key public transportation routes to thinking about where we might be able to intensify some of our corridors. And with a growing population and even some student housing in the downtown, I see some really key opportunities along the 15 corridor, which already has some of the higher density housing. Probably, I would guess, one of the higher transit riderships within our city. I think there's an opportunity to start in some of these kind of areas where we can more organically make some progress and invest in public transit, try and get some of the headways down so that you can travel along that corridor and get to downtown more quickly, because we have some rapid transit, for instance, along the corridor. And once we start to, I think, improve some of that transit access, and hopefully start to attract and think about new development along the corridor's way, or corridor as well, we can start to get some synergy going between the way that people move along the corridor and where they might actually live and access services along that corridor.
Absolutely. Yeah, I think that is definitely a great place to start. Okay, I think that's all the time we have for today. Thank you so much for being here with us and speaking. That was very, very educational.
Thanks very much. As I said, it was a pleasure to be here.